Hey, it has been a long week, and we've talked about guns, went ghost hunting, and discussed some theoretical physics. Oh, my. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a really smart group of people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It is time for the break room.
White House Chief of Staff John Kelly is again facing criticism for some controversial remarks. This time, it's for comments he made about the Civil War and Confederate General Robert E. Lee.
Russia, Russia, Russia.
Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. Hey, you're freezing.
Okay, and joining us in the break room are Tomika DePriest. She is Senior Director of Marketing at Emory University. Ed Sohn, Vice President of the media company Thomson Reuters. Simon Bloom, constitutional attorney. We will need you in a couple of segments here. In the Bloom Sugarman Law Firm, and actor and comedian London Brown is with us. You may know him best from the HBO series Ballers. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is the top line name on that show, right?
That's the guy.
He's the guy. He performs here in Atlanta at the Punchline tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the break room.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to each and every one of you. Let's get started. Boy, we've got a lot of topics here that need your thoughts, your feedback. A Cobb County elementary school has ended its traditional Civil War dress-up event after a kid dressed as a plantation owner said, "You are a slave, you are my slave," to a black student. Here's Corey Davis, the student's mother, talking to the Associated Press.
So my son said he just walked away and talked to some of his other friends, and he just sort of internalized that. You never reenact activities where there's a power dynamic, where there was a struggle of oppression. Simulating that means that when this activity is over, what are the children left to think about?
All right, Tomika, let me start with you on this one. Was there a good way to do this, or was it always destined to go badly here?
Well, in my opinion, it's par for the course. I mean, why do people think there was a civil war? It was a fight to maintain slavery. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to me to think about the parameters for that age group that you might put on it to keep it from going wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Ed, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, is it an idea that has outlived its time?
I think that, you know, something like that, a reenactment at that age, it requires a certain amount of nuance to really, and reflection to grasp, you know, the gravity of what's happening there. And that's not going to happen at that kind of young, impressionistic age. At some point, we do have to trust disruptive expressions, and that's important. And that reenactment, it has value and merit.
Disruptive expressions?
You know, I think that if there is some type of enactment that's trying to express that power dynamic in some way, there is certainly an audience for that where we need to be confronted with the reality of that. But that's not a 10-year-old in an elementary school, certainly not.
Simon, what was your reaction when you read this piece?
It was destined for failure. With the age context, and we don't know all the facts, and we don't know all the contours and the parameters that were put around the exercise. I think an exercise that explores the Civil War and tries to derive lessons from it,
there's some value to that?
And understand the history, there's absolutely some value to it. It's our history. It's the nation's history, like it or not. That's our history.
Yeah. London, your thoughts when you heard about the story?
I think that what makes it interesting is that if people don't know the history of it well enough, then, you know, you go into these things kind of aloof, and you're like, well, it's not that bad. I just, you know, just a costume. And it gets dismissed if they don't really understand the undergird of what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I want to sneak another one in here before we hit a break here. A new service is providing a number you can give to a guy or a woman who won't stop pestering you, right? You go to a lounge or bar or whatever else, you're hanging out with your friends, and someone is after you for a number. What happens is you give this person the number to get them to move on, right? And when they text that number, they get a response turning them down in no uncertain terms. I'll read what the text says in a moment here. It's called the Mary Sue. Ed, what do you think of the service? Something you'd use?
So here's the thing about that service, right? Here, my problem with the service is that, excuse me, it seems a little gimmicky. I mean, if you need a vehicle to kind of be passive aggressive and put off somebody like that, I mean, it's a good tool. It's a good idea. It's also got mechanical problems. I work in technology, and
oh, it
that,
does.
That number actually is just the one number. So you can use it once. But then if that guy saves that into that his phone and says, like, okay, this is the creepster text response or whatever, the next time someone else tries to use it and gives out that number again, it's going to come up as if in his phone book as fake creepster deterrent hotline.
Oh, I see.
And he's going to be like, oh, I get it. And then you got an awkward situation in that moment when you've just tried to give him a fake number.
It's going to be awkward either way. I'm totally fine with that. I wish women back when I was single and my wife's listening would have just said, hey, I'm not interested, and move on. Then I don't sit idly by with bated breath at the phone waiting for it to ring.
Right.
Well, sometimes, you know, women do try that, but persistence, some people have learned or think that persistence pays off. Yeah. And so as I think about this service, if I have a creeper, I'm calling the police.
Right.
It's that simple for me. And in terms of whether or not I will use the service, no. I'm just going to say no and keep it moving.
London, what are your thoughts?
Honestly, guys don't mind a woman being kind of creepish, not stalkerish. But if she can, because creep borderline is also on the line of like, you know what? I know we ain't met before, but if we can, you know, it's not so bad sometimes as a guy, because guys, you know, we creeps sometimes. So we're like, you know,
you
I don't mind
a girl creep on you.
I don't mind a creep,
right?
To a degree. Be clean. That's all I'm saying.
And be clean. Okay, it's Friday, and we're in the break room just ahead. Taking smoke breaks, big implosions, and Robert E. Lee. That's next on Second Thought. I'm Tony Harris, in for Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. We're having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do each Friday. And my guests today are Tomika DePriest, Senior Director of Marketing at Emory University, Ed Sohn, Vice President of the media company Thomson Reuters, Simon Bloom, Constitutional Attorney at the Bloom Sugarman Law Firm, and actor and comedian London Brown is with us. He is performing at the Punchline here in Atlanta tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Okay, more bad news for President Trump. He is named Paul Manafort.
President Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was charged with conspiracy against the United States. Yeah, apparently his conspiracy against the United States was suggesting to Donald Trump that he run for president.
Okay, so are you clear on the Russia investigation? I guess is the overarching question here. If not, you're certainly not alone. Now, for many, the whole thing is pretty convoluted. It certainly feels confusing at times and weighty, of course. Are you still following what's going on? Simon, look, let me come to you on this. How big a deal will this turn? We're talking about, in one case, a guilty plea. And two other cases, we're talking about indictments. How big a deal is this? How big a turn is this in the investigation?
It's a major turn for the two guys that have just been indicted. It's a political turn for Donald Trump. But from a legal standpoint, the Manafort indictments are very specific, and they all deal with conduct up into and not past 2014. So there's no actual attachment to the 2016 campaign, which was the purpose of the Mueller mandate as special counsel. He was mandated to investigate and to pursue crimes that were arising out of this election. And what he's done is he's gone deeper and wider and expanded his own breadth, which is a dangerous precedent all of itself. But from a political standpoint, does it make Trump look bad that he had guys that were potentially laundering money, $12 million worth of money that came from the Ukraine? Yeah, it looks bad.
Do you see a route that leads further up the food chain, that ultimately could ensnare more people, more senior people in the Trump administration?
Not from this indictment.
Not from this.
If Mueller had that data, if he had those facts, if he had that evidence, by God, you know it would have been in this indictment coming into the 2016 campaign.
Ed, do you think that there is some squeezing going on here, that he's working up the food chain?
I don't know the answer to that. I will say that, you know, I appreciate the approach of following the channels. I agree that there's a dangerous precedent in terms of expanding the scope, but an indictment requires a certain amount of evidence. That evidence, you know, they felt like they met that threshold. And compare this to, for instance, like the actions of like James Comey, who just had random press conferences and was saying, or press releases saying that like, oh, we're investigating this. This is actually a legal document that, you know, meets at some level, you know, some prima facie kind of burden of proof, right? Some basic elements. And I think that that's meaningful, because if you have that and you are entrusted with investigating this whole situation, You can't not bring those charges also. Yeah. I mean, that would be my argument.
Does the guilty plea from George Papadopoulos suggest to you that there may be that Mueller may be working on the collusion side through Papadopoulos?
There's no question that Mueller is trying to find the collusion aspect or the Russian involvement in the 2016 campaign and the election. That's obvious. But finding the evidence that establishes it and connects it to Trump and or his people is another thing entirely. And I don't think he's going to stop until he feels like he's exhausted all that analysis and all those resources.
Yeah, I think the name of the game is how can we turn others, right? How can we use these indictments
to leverage
and connect to others? I know Hope Hicks, his close aide, is on the list. Next. We'll have to see what the outcome is with that.
London, what do you, as you look at everything that's unfolding here, right, this investigation, how do you see it? How do you view it? What are your thoughts on it at this point?
I think as you get on a certain platform, and you start to form your team, I think you need to go to a Starbucks or Chick-fil-A, wherever you need to go.
Okay.
And say, look, let's have some sandwiches and listen. Make everybody feel very comfortable, very relaxed. If you got anything that we need to know about moving forward, let's just go on and put it out there. Get it all out there. We can figure out and let's adjust it. So then we go out there in the media and people start pulling out all these things out of your closet. You say, you know what, Eddie? Hey, we've already addressed that.
Right.
He got this and that, and we can just walk forward.
And you don't feel that has been done adequately to this point?
Not yet.
Not to this point.
Things are coming out of everywhere. It's like people are digging in their pockets. Hey, man, here's this.
I forgot about this meeting. I didn't mention this meeting.
Dude, just get your
team. Yeah, I know a couple of Russians, even though I said I didn't know a couple of Russians.
But you know what? Front and move forward.
But you know what? Manafort is fired. And one would think that it's partially because of that, right? And I agree. Vetting, super basic. Right. Why would you not do that? One would think that Manafort was fired for a reason. What doesn't make sense is the continued support that's coming from the Trump administration for this character. That's what doesn't make sense to me.
Well, he has no choice at that point. Otherwise, he's self-indicting. He has to defend to some extent and deflect like he did with his text or his tweet rant this morning at 3:57 a.m.
Gosh, I didn't see that. Yeah. Okay, a show of hands. I know that's terrible for radio. Of our break room gang with children. Show of hands. London, yeah.
Okay. I don't have any kids.
Okay. And Tamika, okay, great. When kids don't get enough sleep, bad things, I'm told, start to happen.
He was sent to in-school suspension for refusing to take a test, and then he fell asleep in in-school suspension.
I've just been tired. I've been working late. And
where are you working right now?
More like pulling out trees.
At midnight.
It takes all day to pull out a big stump, dude.
Okay, so new research says teens are more sleep deprived than ever, and smartphones are the villains. Let's go to the parents here of young people. Do your teens seem to need more sleep? What's the solution here, Ed?
So my teen is actually 1 year old, and we try to limit his screen time. It's true. He sleeps great all night long. I will say,
how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, I would say, you know. The interesting thing, the kind of counterpoint to this study is that I remember a few years ago, and it felt really justifying and really vindicating, that teens hormonally actually, they just are later sleepers and later risers. It's actually something that's built into like a shift in the circadian rhythm.
Huh?
So smartphones might be a culprit and blue light and all that kind of stuff. But I actually read that, and that there's several studies now that show that teens into kind of the early college years, they're wired kind of fundamentally, biologically, to sleep late and wake up late. So I'm all about that. That explains my entire freshman year in college, is what I'm saying.
I need to understand the whole blue light thing a little better because I'm struggling with this myself. But Simon, what are your thoughts on this? You have a teen?
I can't speak to the teen years other than the ones I experienced, which didn't have cell phones. But my six-month-old Betsy Bloom is a social media champion already. But there's a simple solution to this, and that's simply to take the phone away at bedtime. I mean, if we were really worried about the things that you and I did when we were kids on the phone.
I can't put my phone down.
Boom.
You got to sleep.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't put my computer away. I can't put my phone down.
I can.
You can.
This problem with teens isn't just limited to teens.
Right.
I mean, so the adults in society have this issue as well.
And in this room.
And when I was a teen, my mom just took the phone when she caught me late one night on it. And so, you know, just about 11 o'clock every night, she'd That's come right. and collect it, take it to their bedroom.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't see it again until the next day.
Right.
Yeah.
London, it's,
yeah.
I think it's a, well, it's a problem, right?
It is serious. Like, that's the thing, the core of it is that we all, most of us can't put our phones down, but the reasons why is different. If I'm with a woman, I can't, if I don't quite trust her, I got to sleep with my phone.
Stop.
It's those kinds of things where I'm like, I can sleep. The phone isn't the problem. It's the person I'm with that makes me uncomfortable. But I feel like we are attached.
Are we back to the creepy segment? Yeah, is that where we are now?
You should give her this fake phone number. I heard it works really good.
I got a fake phone number. I feel like, you know, sometimes you just want to, it's always about just want to get the last reply.
Yes.
Just want to, and you'll be up. I've done it. I've been up extra hours just trying to say goodnight.
No, you hang up.
Gotcha.
You hang up.
All right, so here's, I want your reaction to this. Here's White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, describing General Robert E. Lee during a recent Fox News interview.
I would tell you that Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. He was a man that gave up his country to fight for his state.
Now, he also said the Civil War happened because both sides couldn't compromise. The reaction was both fierce and immediate. Simon, what is this? A failure to compromise. So that's the reason there was a Civil War.
Yeah, he's got the history wrong there. And we have to look at several elements of what he said in order to be able to make any kind of judgment about what he's saying. And I'm very, very sensitive to historic relativism. And that is the danger of imposing our current day morality on things that people did. If we're going to take the position that someone was a bad person or that something was morally oppositional, that's one thing. He's wrong on the history. The North and the South tried to compromise for years. They negotiated for years before the secession occurred. And there was simply an uncompromisable issue for the South, and that was the ownership of slavery, of slaves.
Yeah.
And that was not a position that could be compromised. It's pretty clear that the line was drawn in the sand, and then hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their lives as a result.
Yeah. Ed, what was your reaction when you heard this?
I mean, setting aside just the insane sensitivities on this topic and the general good judgment to not open your yap on it, it feels like, yeah, absolutely he was wrong. That's revisionist history. But I do think that wars are started for a lot of factors that don't come out in history books. And like that's worth being objective about. Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with not imposing morality retrospectively. But the only compromise that would have obviated the Civil War is if the South said, yeah, abolition is cool with us. Like that, right. And they ratified that in the Constitution. That is the only compromise that would have averted the Civil War.
And Tamika, he kind of stepped into it. I don't think there's any other way around that. We can probably all agree on that.
Yeah, he did. I think that sort of reflects what happens in society. I mean, we need to have these conversations, and we need to understand why the Civil War happened. I mean, there's a lot of different thoughts that emanate, but it all goes back to enslavement and property ownership. But for some reason, we dance around that. I know why.
Well,
it's difficult. It's painful. But we have to face the pain and move forward.
Yeah.
And I'm 100% on board with using it like we did with the Cobb County example, using the Civil War as a platform to have the difficult discussions around race relations in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. What I am very careful about and warn against is making moral judgments about people that participated on one side of the line or the other 120 years ago.
Okay.
But that's what tends to happen. I mean, if you think about Martin Luther King and the whole moral compass, I mean, that actually was the argument in terms of abolitionist movement during that period. So I don't think you're going to be able to separate morality
from
the situations.
So, Lyndon, I'm going to come to you on this one. Netflix has canceled A House of Cards after news of star Kevin Spacey's alleged sexual harassment of a then 14-year-old. He has issued an apology during which he came out as gay. Some see this as a timely deflection. What would you like to see happen to the Netflix series? I guess it's being canceled. That's one thing. And then what should happen to Kevin Spacey? You're in that world of being in series work. You know what it means to have a show canceled and what that means for everyone connected to that production.
Right.
Your thoughts on the show being canceled by Netflix and then what should happen to Kevin Spacey?
I think that Kevin Spacey's going to be fine. That's the first thing. Why? Because it's set up this way. You know, there's some things culture, and I have friends who say, you know, London, come on, London, everything isn't about race. Mm. I'm like, you're in denial. It is the fabric of the country.
And you think he's going to be okay because
he's going to be okay
because he's white.
He's a white guy. He'd be fine. And don't get me wrong. He's dope. He's a dope actor. He's very talented. But the way it's set up, he's going to have the support that he's going to need.
Right.
And he has the skills to stay in there. But the system and the way it's set up, he'll be fine.
Yeah, and Tamika, you think he's going to be fine?
I actually do. You think
agree.
Down the line he will be.
He'll be able to weather this and continue his career. And
I'm going to compare and look at, even though Bill Cosby is at the end of, you know, he's much older than Kevin Spacey, but let's watch the two and see what happens.
Simon, what are your thoughts?
Well, Harvey Weinstein's not going to be fine.
No.
And he's white as the day and the sunshine. And I don't think I don't think it has much, if anything, to do with race in this regard. If you are that wealthy and that powerful and that well-noted and well-respected for your trade, and you do something stupid or illegal in this case, you should face the consequences one way or the other. And I hope that if, in fact, he did something illegal, that he is prosecuted the way anyone else, white or black, yellow or green, would be prosecuted.
Yeah.
And I think that he will be, and you're seeing that. I think you're seeing that throughout the industry.
Let me jump ahead to one more. Let me see if I can squeeze one more topic in here. The implosion of the Georgia Dome is set for November 20th.
4, 3, 2.
All right, here comes the implosion.
Implosion? But I thought you said...
Tamika, are you interested in this at all? You can't go and see it live. You got to watch it on television.
No.
No?
No. I am not.
Why? Don't you like to see big things go boom?
No, it's like watching. For me, it's like watching paint dry on the wall. I mean, it's boring after probably the first couple seconds.
Ed, big thing goes boom.
I have not been to the new stadium. I heard it's amazing. I definitely
what
look forward to
going
to a game
on
there.
Here?
But you know what? I am kind of against this kind of symbolic destruction of stadiums as disposable. I don't think that that's right. I think that could have been repurposed. I live near Turner Field. I don't think it's right that the Braves left. I've been to a new game in SunTrust Park. I hear the new stadium is great, but like, think about the waste. You know, the implosion is just going to be like this gigantic symbol of the waste of the Georgia Dome.
Simon, help me here. I kind of want to see the big thing go boom, but...
Well, you were also probably up in the North Georgia mountains for the eclipse. I didn't make the trip up there. It's not as important to me. I don't have a political objection to it being destroyed. I don't feel any impulsion to run down there and watch it. The new stadium is great. But from my standpoint, I'm not much of a voyeur.
Right.
And this is really about voyeurism.
London, quickly.
As a photographer, I like the shots. But guys are guys. We like mud. So seeing something go bang, boom, is exciting.
We are out of time in the break room today. Thanks to all of my guests, Tamika DePriest, Senior Director of Marketing at Emory University at Zone. He's a vice president for the media company Thomson Reuters. Simon Bloom is a constitutional attorney for the Bloom Sugarman Law Firm. Actor and comedian London Brown has been with us. You can catch him this weekend at The Punchline. And that is all of our time for On Second Thought. Have a great weekend. I'm Tony Harris, in for Celeste Headlee.